Welcome to The Upshot, Multi-World Disc Golf's podcast about the latest in the disc golf world. I'm the publisher, Charlie Eisenhood. Joining me is Jamie Thomas, and we're in the home stretch of the 2020 disc golf season. Odd as it has been, we've had a full pro tour. We're coming up on the final regular season event on the pro tour, and we're just a week away now from the U.S. Disc Golf Championships and Women's National Championship, and then we'll have the DGPT Championship to close out the year. Exciting stuff, Jamie. I'm sure you're excited. You're going to be doing a lot of commentary over the next few weeks.
Yeah, tomorrow getting ready to get back in the saddle for the Jonesboro show, and then two straight weeks after that of a couple of championship tournaments, and sure feels like the Pro Tour is getting their scramble mark for the season, right?
Things got
off the fairway a little bit, but they got it back. So very excited, and honestly can't believe it's already here.
It's crazy. What a strange overall year. But let's take a look as we get into this Jonesboro Open weekend in Arkansas. We have the Pro Tour standings and players jockeying for position in terms of their buys or even whether they're going to make it to the championship event or not. There's 32 spots available. So let's take a little bit of a look at where we stand. Currently, here are your players that have buys to semifinals. We'll start with MPO. Paul McBeth, Calvin Heimberg, Ricky Wysocki, Eagle McMahon, Nicolo Castro, Kevin Jones, Chris Dickerson, and James Conrad. So that's your top eight. James Conrad not playing this weekend, so he is at risk and basically probably will drop out if Philo, who's at 10, or Double G, or Simon Lazat has a solid weekend, because I believe he's already dropped his three events. So he will miss out on points this weekend and probably drop out of that top eight. So there's a race for that bye spot to the quarterfinals. Your bubble players at the other end, of course, that you've got, you know, your next eight get a bye to quarterfinals. But even more interesting is like who's going to get in or not at the bottom end of things. And right now, you've got a couple players all below 180 total points. Jordan Castro, Andrew Marweed, Greg Barsby, and Matt Bell, they're all in right now. But of those, only Andrew Marweed is registered to play Jonesboro. So Andrew Presnell and Brian Earhart, who are both within about 50 points of Matt Bell, are going to have a chance. They're both registered. They're going to have a chance to play up and in. Maybe Nate Perkins could also make that leap if he has a really good weekend. So spots on the line for the Pro Tour Championship coming up in Charlotte.
Yeah, super interesting that only five of the players from the 17 to 32nd position are not registered. So still could be quite a bit of movement this weekend as far as Pro Tour points, because the other interesting thing, like you're pointing out, Charlie, between 8th and 9th, there's only a 5-point gap, a little less than that, actually. Between that 16th and 17th, there's a 1-point gap. So a lot of shuffling could still happen. And you mentioned Presnell and Earhart. They're knocking on the door to keep Barsby and Bell from even qualifying for Pro Tour, which is interesting for a guy like Greg Barsby, who is going to be at USDGC. He took off the sort of northeastern ear of the tour to go back to Texas and rest up. So he may, you know, he wanted to go to the Charlotte area for two weekends in a row, but he may be sitting out unless there's some no-shows in the 17 to 32 category. So still, things are not settled, which is kind of cool. It's been like the rest of the season where it's like, oh, who's going to win player of the year? Oh, nobody's got more than two victories. Well, the field's not really locked for USDGC or for the Pro Tour Championship, even though we're a week and 2 weeks respectively out.
I guess that's right. I mean, there's spots on the line for USDGC this weekend as well. So that's a whole subplot of its own as players try to qualify without having to go through the Monday qualifying tournament. So over in FPO, your top four are Paige Pierce, Sarah Hokum, Katrina Allen, and Missy Gannon. They're sitting on a bye to semifinals. Their spots look pretty safe. I guess it's theoretically possible if Missy Gannon had a terrible weekend that she could drop out. For the most part, it looks like she'll be pretty comfortably through in that semifinal spot. There's only 16 positions available in FPO. And what's exciting is that the 14, 15, 16 spots and the 17 spot, they're all playing this weekend. So Vanessa Van Dyken at 14, Courtney Cannon, Deanne Carey, they're all trying to hold off Cynthia Ricciotti, who's 9 points back from Deanne Carey and is registered for Jonesboro this weekend. So Vanessa Van Dyken looks pretty safe. Courtney Cannon, Deanne Carey, Cynthia Ricciotti, they're fighting for that final spot at the, or the final two spots, I should say, in the Pro Tour Championship.
Yeah, a lot more settled here over in FPO, and you really got to shout out Missy Gannon when you just kind of look at across the board what she's done, especially since the restart. She's played extremely well. In fact, only missing the top 10 one time at Ledgestone, but was able to drop that. So, you know, maybe we haven't been calling her name out on the broadcast quite as much in the last few weeks, but she's been hanging right around there and right up there with the rest of the world champions. And it kind of surprised me to see Jessica Weiss in that fifth spot too. She's had a little bit more of a roller coaster of a season, got some seconds and thirds, also got 20th and 11th, the 12th, the 14th. But when she swings big, she hits big, and, you know, beating out Haley King by a spot, it's just kind of funny how the points play out. Sometimes it really helps settle down the eye test when you're looking at that, you know, what have you done for me lately, or
totally
how good does your shot look? Well, you still have the players who are just doing it week in and week out and getting their spot, getting their ticket punched.
And that, you know, the math is straightforward. The math doesn't lie. And, you know, so, you know, you think about that by that measure, Paul McBeth, see the player of the year right now? Probably. But so much is going to ride on these final three events of the year. So that brings us to Jonesboro. And I guess let's quickly take a look. What's going on with USDGC spots? Jonesboro is a qualifier, and it's a little hard to figure out right now, because so many players in the field, of course, have already qualified. But there will be spots available for those that that finished in the top five spots behind those who've already qualified. So, if you have a great weekend, you're going to go to USDGC.
Yeah, no doubt. And it's such a hectic thing for the players that are not yet qualified, because the tournament's going to end on Saturday, and Monday qualifying is literally, you know, less than 48 hours after that. So, and by the way, Jonesboro and Rock Hill, not particularly close together either. So it's going to be an interesting stretch, and we've seen quite a few players in the past. This is the time where some of the bigger names have already done it. They've punched the ticket, and so you can just get in there and try to sneak that spot and make something happen for yourself. So I'd be very interested to see who makes it in out of this weekend, and then who has to go Monday and try to qualify.
Notably, Jonesboro is not the only tournament that's qualifying to USDGC this weekend. That also goes to the Texas State Championships, which were rescheduled after COVID disrupted them earlier this year. Of course, remember, it was going to be on the national tour. And so that's kicking off in Tyler, Texas on October 2nd. The highest rated player in the field is Emerson Keith. He's already qualified for USDGC, but a lot of other players looking to make their name in that top five qualifying spots, including Brody Smith, who's in the field hoping to finish top five. He tweeted about that earlier this week. So maybe we'll see Brody Smith at USDGC. He's already beaten some of the players up above him in the sort by rating. including Coda Hatfield and others at tournaments earlier this year. So he should be competitive for one of those spots, and we'll see if he can pull it off at the Texas State Championships.
Yeah, notably Emerson Keith leaving behind the sixth place finish at the Jonesboro Open last year. So a name, not only is he already in the USDGC, not only is he the highest rated player in that Texas State's field, but he's got good history at the Jonesboro course too. So that it kind of helps both fields, in all honesty, since there's qualifying spots at each.
All right, well, let's talk a little bit about Jonesboro coming up this weekend. Of course, next week's show will come out early in the week, and it's going to be all things USDGC, our full USDGC preview show, one that we always look forward to. So stay tuned for that. We are going to talk a little USDGC today in our subscriber bonus segment. We're going to talk about the dark horse candidates to win USDGC and the Women's National Championship. So we hope you will tune in for that. You can become a subscriber for less than $4 a month at discgolf.ultiworld.com/subscribe. So Jonesboro, last year, Paul McBeth, Paige Pierce took home the crown in this tournament. I feel like I could just throw out a name of a tournament and say that Paul McBeth and Paige Pierce won, and you'd probably believe me. But in fact, they did win. McBeth beating Garrett Gerthy by 3 strokes, and Paige Pierce getting a 1-stroke win over Katrina Allen. And so, all things considered, I have to say, I was expecting the field for this tournament to be lackluster, given that it's a bit out of the way if you're going to South Carolina for USDGC. But honestly, it's a pretty good field. We're seeing a lot of good players show up. Maybe a chance to get some competitive rounds in before the only major of the year. And with some time off since MVP Open, players heading out there. And there's a few players that aren't going to be in the field, but nothing that really makes you surprised. Like Eagles not playing this weekend. But for the most part, this is going to be a very competitive Disc Golf Pro Tour event.
I think so. I'm very excited to see that there's still some love for the tournament. And I think a lot of that has to do with what we just talked about, honestly. The fact that the points race is not settled and there's still some opportunities for these players to get moved, to make moves ahead of, the final up there at Hornets Nest, probably factors in here, but it's just great. I mean, the fact that you're going to get to see Kevin Jones on the closest course, basically his home tour track, Simon Lazat, he could come and really throw some bombs out here. Garrett Gerthy can as well. Just a lot of different styles of game. Contrast that with like a Philo Brathwaite, who's going to try to play a little more smooth, like a Jeremy Colling. So you still not only get a number of names, but a number of styles of game that you're going to see tackle this just over almost 9,900 foot, actually, layout, par 64, out at the Disc Side of Heaven course.
The length of the course seems to be its defining feature. Would you agree with that, Jamie?
Yeah, I think the fairways just encourage a lot of big shots, even on the holes that don't lay out as long by the numbers. There's still, if you're going around the corner, you got to make sure you get wide of the corner and then hyzer it in, kind of things like that. This is sort of a tee pad launcher course. You just really like to get up there and send it and see what happens. You can get into some trouble, and you can definitely find those bogey bushes, that get you stuck in there, don't really have a lie or an approach to the green. But I think it's a thrower's choice.
And this is one of the few tournaments that, originally got disrupted by COVID that was able to, meaningfully reschedule. I mean, Texas State's is another one. But for Jonesboro Open, we saw other events on the Disc Golf Pro Tour earlier this year get fully canceled, like the San Francisco Open. But Jonesboro missed its original time slot and said, hey, we'll put it right before the USDGC. And honestly, I think people are excited to check out the course again, and clearly pros are showing up. So all things considered, it's a huge win in a difficult year for a tournament that was trying to happen in April.
Congrats to the tournament directors, whole staff and volunteers, everybody. It's so hard to do that kind of stuff, to just turn the Titanic sort of maneuver and the fact that you can get it in just in the nick of time before the championship rundowns in the next couple weeks, that's awesome. Just, again, getting that scramble rating on the Pro Tour this year, we get to have a full season. We're pretty lucky in that sense.
Let me ask you this. Do you think that the results this weekend will tell us anything about what we're going to see at Winthrop in a week?
Ooh. I don't know that you're going to learn anything good. I mean, I'd love for you to disagree with me there if you think, but I don't know that there's anybody that's going to come out at Jonesboro and just show me something that's going to make me completely change my perception of how they do at Winthrop. I think people could get hurt or people could look bad and you could go, oh, wow, red flag. But that's sort of the danger of playing this week, too. And that's what it tells me, that people care about the Pro Tour points specifically, and they care about the USDGC spots if they're not already qualified. That has to be the biggest reason. No disrespect to the title itself for Jonesboro or the payout or anything like that, but like, to me, those have to be the bigger factors in drawing such a good field out there. Agree, disagree?
I do agree. I mean, I think that's always going to be inevitable with a tournament that comes at the end of the regular season and right before USDGC. You could put any tournament in this spot and we'd probably be saying the same thing. And, you know, I think Jonesboro doesn't have the cachet of a MVP Open either. I mean, let's be honest. Now, in terms of what it's going to teach us about Winthrop or performance at Winthrop, I think the challenge really is Winthrop just demands a different style of golf than really almost anywhere else on tour, but certainly different than Jonesboro, where, you know, there's not as much punishing OB. There's obviously ways to miss shots and get into trouble, but it's more of a you need distance kind of course. And I think that's why, you know, you see Double G play really well last year. It's why you see Paige and Katrina leading the way in FPO. And while distance is helpful at Winthrop, it's not the only thing. Certainly not. And we've seen players that don't have the greatest distance still be very, very competitive at USDGC and at Winthrop. So I'm going to be curious to look for, you know, players who are being consistent about putting their shots where they want them, you know, even if they don't win the tournament. You know, let's say Simon goes out there and just has a great weekend and bombs and he's, you know, out throwing people by 50 to 100 feet and he wins a tournament. I mean, that would be a very cool story, but it might not necessarily give me a great deal of confidence that he's going to go out and do the same thing at USDGC. It's such a different style of golf required. So that's going to be something that I keep an eye on. It's like, who's putting well, whose upshots are really good, whose scrambling is looking sharp. I think those are some of the factors that you can look to in order to give you some insight into what we're going to see at Winthrop.
So it sounds like you can kind of see what you want to see in this Jonesboro event. If you want to say your favorite player is doing well,
that's
and
right,
looking good ahead of the event, go ahead and draw that line. But
we're palm
totally
reading.
Yeah, but I totally agree. The courses are just too different to get a whole lot of meaningful reads. The best read you're going to get is on people's health and on their mental state. How are they? Are they ready for the first of 3 weekends in a row?
Who do you like this weekend at Jonesboro? Let's make our picks.
Ooh. Well, you got to like a guy like Garrett Gerthy. I mean, you mentioned Paul McBeth beat him by 3 last year, but Double G did start the final round with a 1-stroke lead. You know, always the X factor for Double G is the putt. How is he feeling with it? How confident? And there are some of these greens and especially some of the elevated baskets that are on some greens that can roll away. So how long does the comebacker putt then become? That's a question. You know, I'm looking right next to him, a name like Adam Hammes. This guy is really, really good this year. I think he's a top 3 on tour in putting, so he could probably get it done the opposite way. He throws plenty far, but he can kind of equalize a player like Garrett Gerthy. But at the end of the day, I think the big arms, I mean, you look at a Kevin Jones, a Simon Lizotte, like I said, Double G, those are kind of the guys you expect to see towards the top. But obviously, Macbeth's in the field, Chris Dickerson's in the field, Heimberg's in the field. Did I sit on the fence enough for you there?
I love your fence sitting. I'm gonna this isn't a big leap or anything, but I'm gonna take Kevin Jones this weekend. A little home cooking. Kevin Jones from Arkansas. I think he really wants to go out and play well at this event. And you know, he played pretty well last year. See if I can find the numbers again. He finished eighth. He was 12 strokes behind Macbeth. But he had a great round one. He shot a 53 in round one. That was actually a stroke better than Macbeth. One of the best of the day. I think the hot round was 52 in round one last year. So we know he can put a really low number down. He just didn't play as well in rounds two and three. But I think from what we've seen of his game and his progression this season and an increasing level of consistency, and obviously he's got the win in his back pocket now, I think he's going to come out and play really well. I really like him to win this weekend. I think it means more to him than it does to some of the other players who are really going to be thinking about this event as an opportunity to get tuned up for the USDGC. You know, and that's fine. I also like Macbeth on my podium just because he's been playing great. And it's got to be in the back of guys' minds. Winning this weekend for about 6 to 10 players could really improve their standings in the player of the year race. And that's like that's an actual factor. So that's also something to think about in terms of motivation. And then I like Chris Dickerson, who finished third here last year and, you know, was pretty consistent. Shot 55, 59, 56. You know, you shave a stroke off of each of those rounds and you're right there. So that's my top three. It's Jones, Macbeth, Dickerson. I think Double G's going to be a bomber off the tee, as always, but his putting's just not been good enough this season. He's like 65th on tour or something. And yeah. You got to be able to hit the putts.
Yeah, I think I'd go Dickerson if you want me to put down a podium. I think I'd go Dickerson, probably Jones and LeCastro. You can swap the order on them if you want to. I agree, Double G's putting just hasn't quite been as sharp as it was in 2019. I love Simon, especially on a course like this, but I don't think I could pick him to win until his elbow is better and yeah. He can throw the forehand again, because it's so dangerous when he can go both forehand, backhand, and without that, you're still seeing him finish in top tens all over the place, but he's just not threatening as much.
It's a bummer too, because you got to have the forehand. I mean, unless you're James Conrad, you got to have the forehand at Winthrop. And I honestly wonder if he's going to try to throw through it, since it's the year's only major. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. And you'll note I didn't say Macbeth or Heimberg, and maybe this is too much of a media perspective, because why else would the guys travel out there if they're not going to try to win? But it just seems like with the position they're in, they're not going to have that need to take it to that extra gear.
Totally agree.
To try to win the tournament.
I totally agree.
This is frankly just not that important of an event for either of those two guys to win right now. They have bigger fish to fry. Again, no disrespect, but like, they've got USDGC in the Tour Championship, and they're first and second in DGP 2 points, respectively.
Over in FPO, let's make some picks as well. I'm going to stick there at the top. Paige Pierce, your top three last year, by the way, were Paige Pierce, Katrina Allen, Hannah Blomroos, who of course will not be in attendance this year, and they dominated compared to the rest of the field. But I've got Pierce at number one, distance plus where her game's at, plus the putting. It's just a whole package. And I think she's going to defend her title. I've also got Katrina Allen up there as well. I think they're going to go 1-2 again. And really, so the question comes down to that third and final spot. You got to have the distance. And that's the real question mark for me, is like, who is next on tour in distance? Honestly, don't know. But I'm going to go with Haley King, who's been playing great lately.
That's the answer.
Maybe that's the answer.
That is the answer. That's the next furthest thrower in this list. But and she's who I'm going to put at the top of my podium, by the way, too. I'm going to, you know, you could 1A, 1B, Haley King, Paige Pierce here. Katrina Allen certainly could win. You could even say 1C. But I'm going to just send the vibes to Haley King after how she battled at the Green Mountain Championship. I see some similarities in the way she was able to break down that Fox Run Meadows course and this Disc Side of Heaven course. A lot of those same kind of shots, that same kind of confidence could propel her towards the top of the leaderboard. Just every lesson that she's been learning along the way is going to result in a win. Maybe it's this weekend. But Pierce and Allen are definitely the next two players that you got to look out for. Again, there's just like everybody's pretty locked in terms of those pro tour points. So the big motivation in opposite of how we're talking about MPO, I think the big motivation here is going to be, hey, who wants a W on tour? Who wants to break the Paige Pierce streak that's happened over these last few weekends? And I think Haley King is probably the most motivated to do that right now.
You got to think. She's been so close. And I'll tell you what, considering how well she played Fox Run, that is a very good sign for her chances at Winthrop. And we will talk. We will talk more about Haley King on our preview show next week. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about some of the changes at Winthrop, some of the layout changes, and what the FPO course is going to look like for the Women's National Championship. We've also got some mental toughness scenarios, some moments sent in from our listeners who are going to get a free pass to the Metal Toughness clinic coming up in early October. So stick around. You're listening to The Upshot. The Upshot is presented by Pound Disc Golf, makers of the best bags in the sport. And you know the bags are good when they sell out of literally everything on the website. I mean, it's hard to get a Pound bag right now. They just announced that their custom bag program has been so popular that they're limiting the number that they sell each month. So at the beginning of the month, they're going to open up stock. And if you want to make your own custom Oglethorpe or custom Carlton, got to jump on there early in the month, get your order in so that you don't miss the window. They've been amping up their production, but just like everybody in disc golf, busy, busy, busy. Considering that the quality that they absolutely guarantee in their products, they can't just go and, you know, outsource it to another country to start making these bags. So keep an eye on their website, pounddiscgolf.com. Look for the drops. They're coming. And if you want to get a custom bag, set your calendar. We're just a couple days from the start of October. There's going to be custom availability coming up. So don't hesitate. Upgrade your bag right now at pounddiscgolf.com. Welcome back to The Upshot. All right, so we made a call after we talked to James Bress and Tina Booth about their new mental toughness program in disc golf called Metal Toughness. And we asked our listeners to send in moments where maybe they weren't so mentally tough. And we got some great, great stories. So we're going to tell some of them now. Jamie, pick your favorite.
Oh, my goodness. All right. This one. Frank Garcia, the legend on the show already, for sending us emails, and he sent us a pretty good one here. So, he says, playing a tournament hole that is straight down from the top of a dam, the Hoover Reservoir in Columbus, Ohio, is down to an island green. My shot makes the island, but catches enough of the hillside guarding one of the sides of the green that it gets up, spins backwards, and rolls a couple of inches OB. I grab my stool and I throw it down the hill. Then, as I'm walking down to the green, I pick up my stool. As I get down to the green, one of the players from the group behind us, who is waiting to tee, hands me my stool and asks for his back. A buddy of mine still tells that story whenever the subject of meltdowns comes up.
It must be like a very tempting throw your stool kind of situation. It must just be like a nice hill. You just see it and you're like, I want to fling the stool here.
Yeah, I have to throw something. And then you just grab the stool. But hey, make sure it's your equipment. You didn't get the courtesy violation, though, so I guess that's good. But I love that story. Thank you, Frank.
Here's one from Scott, Hoogland, and he says, I'm big into mindfulness and the mental side of disc golf. And here's his story. 25 years ago, so shout out to Scott, he's been playing a long time. Four of us are playing Exchange Park in Waterloo, Iowa. One of us, let's call him Brett, has a notorious temper. All of us knew this, and sometimes we'd needle him to get a reaction. The blow-ups were legendary. We are all good players and regularly shoot under par, so the competition was solid. We're about 12 holes in, and Brett is hitting every tree on the course, rimming out low on numerous 20-footers. Of course, we're all making comments that on the surface appear nice, but are actually getting under his skin. He's several over par. Hole 13, he finally throws a good shot and is 30 feet out on a difficult and tricky par 3. The course plays next to a huge river, 600 plus feet across. His putt is perfect, like 100% perfect. But these are those old Mach 1 or 2 baskets. So the putt spits out, stands up, rolls 50 feet right into the river.
Ouch.
Brett screams, fuck this game, and proceeds to throw all 20 discs in his bag into the river, one by one, launching them into the middle. Nobody said a word. We all just stood there and watched. Once done, Brett storms off to the parking lot without saying a word and leaves, stranding us because he drove.
No.
We finished the round and then had to walk to a gas station and use a payphone to call another friend to come pick us up because nobody had cell phones 25 years ago. We all still play semi-regularly to this day.
Wow.
Brett. Imagine, Brett. I'm loving the visual picture of just like pulling a disc out of the bag and being like, all right, I'm going to put this one on hyzer straight into the middle of the water.
and imagine screaming so maniacally mad
that you continue throwing literally all of your discs into the water.
At least Simon just gives his bag to a random kid. He just gave it back to the lake. Holy cow. Wow. Scott, for putting up with that. Oh, man. Okay, I want to know why they still play, like, play together to this day, because I actually know somebody similar who has these kind of blow-ups all the time. They'll quit mid-round. They'll swear they'll just leave a disc on the fairway. And so, you know, one of his friends, he'll go and pick the disc up and put it in his car. And then a week later, the guy will call back up and want to play again. But eventually, like, you get tired of playing with those people. So, Scott, the patience of a saint.
I mean, that's hysterical.
At least you got the story.
That's
I love
hysterical.
The story.
Oh, we got one more from Matt Winter. The subject line of the email is, dumbest bogey ever. Hole 10 of my round. Unfamiliar course to me, but I'm playing the course for the second time of the tournament. We are playing long baskets this time. I hit my gap with my drive, and I'm in a great spot with a big gap blind approach to the basket. I throw it, hit the gap perfect. After it disappears, I hear a sound. Not chains, but metal. I say, did that go in? My card mate looks at me confused and says, yes, but in the short basket. 120-foot throw in on the wrong basket. The long basket was another 50 feet further back in the exact same gap. 10 holes in, and I just forgot we were playing long all of a sudden. Easy par if I mentally stay involved, but I just seem to check out sometimes.
Wow. That's tilting. I mean,
yeah.
I hate courses with two baskets anyway. That's my least favorite configuration, but to do that in a tournament and not have it like wrapped up or something, I almost feel for Matt on that one.
Yeah,
well, I do.
It's definitely tough. It's definitely tough. But you know what? I do that sometimes. Like FDR State Park, where I play a lot, has two tees, two baskets. No. One tee, two baskets. That's right. Mm. And I honestly like the variation, the opportunity to play different. You know, you can play the longs, you play the shorts, you can alternate. But I do frequently forget which basket I'm playing to. And you can't just get the give back, you know? You can't be like, oh, I thought we were playing to the whites and get to re-tee. No one's going to allow that. But it is extremely frustrating to forget which basket you're playing to.
100%. 100%.
All right. Well, some great stories. If you have others, send them to us, upshot@ultiworld.com. And all of the ones we just read off today, you're going to be getting a free pass to the Metal Toughness opening webinar. And that is coming up on Tuesday, October 6th. It's an introduction to mental toughness. It runs from 7 o'clock to 8 o'clock Eastern Time. If you want to check out more about this Metal Toughness program, you can go to nutsy.net. That's NUTC.net. All right, we're going to talk a little bit about the course changes at Winthrop this year. As you know, Jamie, they're always tinkering with this course. And new this year, they're having the Women's National Championship alongside USDGC, which means that they had to put together a layout for FPO on the Winthrop course. So we've got a look at that. The official caddy book is not yet out, but the practice guides have been out for a couple weeks now and basically show you what the course is going to look like. So let's start on the USDGC side. Here are the primary changes to know about. Last year, remember, in order to accommodate more space up around the hospitality area, they eliminated holes 1 and 2. Hole 1, recall, is the typically a forehand hole for right-handed players. There's a little gap on the left, and the basket's up on top of a big rock. And it's a fairly straightforward hole, though it can be a tricky birdie if you're not comfortable with the forehand shot. Hole 2 is the long, that's about probably 450 feet, and it's a, I think it's a, is it a par 4? I'm trying to remember off the top of my head.
Yeah, hole 2 lays out over 600 in total distance, plays as a par 4.
600 feet, I don't know why, yeah. I thought 450, but it's a long, low ceiling first shot. There's OB left, there's a fence on the right-hand side, and the basket is now protected on one side by some of the pillars. The mozzarella sticks, if you will. And those holes are both back. So those got eliminated last year, and they're back, at least in part, because there won't be spectators this year. And so we're kind of going back to the 2018 layout of the course. Other than that, there's not much new. The new holes that were added in place of holes 1 and 2 are gone. So that was last year, that was holes 3 and 4, which was the long across a field shot, and then there was a double mando between two trees out to the basket on the golf green. And then hole 4 was the tunnel shot between two rows of trees with two double mandos. Neither hole was very popular. In fact, I would say both holes were mostly panned by professional players, and they're gone. The other hole that got a lot of criticism last year and in years past is the Triple Island hole 9. That hole's been tinkered with a bunch over the years, and they're tinkering with it again. Still an island green, but now it's not a triple island. It's a contiguous, very narrow fairway, and you can basically decide how much you want to bite off in order to make your shot to the island easier or more difficult. And it's all, you know, ton of OB on both sides, but it's no longer an island on your first shot.
And back to the right tee pad, too. There's been a different tee areas, one closer to the sidewalk and the road, and one that kind of hugs the right one we're talking about, which kind of hugs the baseball diamond a little bit more, a little bit closer to 8's green. So they've used a couple of different positions, but this is something that we certainly haven't seen in a few years, this style of fairway. It'd be pretty interesting. It does look like a very narrow landing zone, and there are some trees that you're going to have to contend with if you want to reduce the length of your upshot. You're going to have to throw around some things. You're not just going to throw straight down.
I'm going to give credit where it's due. I think I'm glad they decided to just go ahead and scrap holes 3 and 4 from last year. Maybe there's something there, but they need to do a little bit more thinking about what they want that to be. A lot of players thought that hole 4 would have been okay if it only had a single double mando, but that the second double mando was unnecessary and kind of made it a little too gimmicky, which of course is a criticism of the course in general. But back to the classic, I like hole 1 and hole 2 quite a bit. personally. So I'm glad they're going to be back on the course.
Yeah, one's, it's hard to say bad things about one other than it just feels kind of easy. I particularly liked the change to old hole three being new hole one, just because it's a more daunting shot to begin your round. So I love it when a course just out of the gate, immediately you know what you're going to be dealing with. There's no like softball kind of just, oh, we're just going to ease into this challenge. But hole two is a lot of fun. It is a tight shot to the green that you can get in trouble with. So I think it's a good move. It also, the other thing to bring up is the championship organizers don't have to interface with the golf course to get that hole three and four like they had it last year. So it's probably a bit of that, the ease of logistics as well playing in. But, you know, you just got to do what you got to do this year. And I think that it's still going to be a great tournament and a great layout. Paul McBeth won the last time this layout was in play. So does that help him out? That'll be a big question.
And then, of course, the other thing to discuss is the Women's National Championship layout. It's going to be difficult to kind of describe all of the changes. There's a full rundown on the Ulti World Disc Golf website, and it goes hole by hole with side-by-side comparisons of the MPO layout and the FPO layout. For the most part, what you need to know is that holes have been either shortened with closer tee pads, or par has been changed to be one stroke easier. There's one hole, I think 16, just confirming that. Yes, on hole 16, the basket has been moved about 50 feet closer to the tee and away from the pillars that guard the left-hand side, and shortening that from a 391-foot par 3 for the MPO field to a 342-foot par 3 for the Women's National Championship. But that's the only hole on which there is a second pin position, a different pin position for the Women's National Championship. Otherwise, it's mostly shortening things up. You know, tee box moving somewhere between 60 to, in some cases, almost 200 feet closer, depending on the hole. And, you know, like hole 12, for example, it's actually moved 262 feet closer to the basket. And that's primarily how they've sort of made the course a little bit more appropriate for the FPO field.
Yeah, by the way, nice work on this article. This looks like it took you a while to lay it all out, because it literally lays out everything.
I was grinding in Photoshop. Grinding.
Yeah, it shows. Everybody go check this article out. You know what, though? My impression here is I really only see one kind of like head scratcher from my perspective, and that's hole 10 just seems like they're using the drop zone as the FPO tee, and that just seems so short. I mean, it's only about a 300 foot carry to get
to
the green.
But it's still a par four.
Yeah. So that seems really aggressive. I mean, because if you think about a 549 foot, you're talking about, 520-ish carry to get all the way to the green. So it seems like it's going to play a decent bit softer for FPO than MPO, and I bring that up because that's what I'm getting from these layout changes. They want to have it play relatively similarly to how the MPO division plays it, because I think a lot of these just moving up the tees on some of the holes where they don't really want to change the challenge of the hole. They just want to adjust the length for the division to be appropriate and for it, the score distribution, to fall kind of the same way. And then in a couple spots, they did modify, like, very interesting, like you said, on 16 with the different basket. Another big one is hole number 5, where not only are they moving it closer by about 200 feet, keeping it a par 5, but they're also removing the Mando over the corner of the lake. So the FPO division is not going to be forced to take the water on for the corner. They could do what all the players used to be able to do and go around that kind of the set of bushes and trees that kind of sits on the very corner of that lake. So overall, that's my expectation is they're saying, okay, here's the scoring breakdown of how the championship has played. We want to try to take that and modify it for the specific division that's playing the women's national championship, but try to make it feel mostly the same.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's why you're mostly just seeing the tee shots being shortened. I mean, that's primarily what you're seeing. There's only a couple holes that are completely unchanged. Hole one, hole three, and those are, you know, correct to leave the same, I think. I do agree with you on 10. I'm shocked that they're making that such a short shot. I find it hard to imagine that there's going to be that many players that aren't going to go for that. You know, it's only 329 feet to the basket, and there's some room short. Obviously, you're throwing over OB most of the way, but I don't see how you'd gain much advantage by trying to lay up like some MPO players do, you know, up along the left-hand side of the fairway and before shooting for the basket. I think we're going to see a lot of eagles on that hole. And I guess we'll see how it plays, but I'm surprised that they shortened that as much as they did.
Yeah, the other thing, because the MPOT has to deal with the corner of the tennis court complex, so there's another obstacle from the disc, but when you get up to where the FPOT is slash the drop zone for the USDGC layout, it's kind of clear airways.
Yeah, there's not much of a gap to have to worry about.
You can swing that hyzer either way that you need to. So, yeah, I do think in that instance, it's probably a little bit favorable for the power players. But then again, look, you got 11, 12, 13 after that, and power players can get into a lot of trouble. So it's probably all going to wash out. And at the end of the day, 17 and 18 are going to play the exact same for both tournaments. So it's still going to be, well, 18 will be a par 5 for the Women's National Championship, but the hole design, exactly the same.
Now, here's a note. There is a difference on 17, not in terms of tee location or pin location, but on terms of the OB rules. They are different for the Women's National Championship.
Oh.
So, in the rules allow for players to re-tee from a separate drop zone after an OB stroke on the first shot, you know, going to the island. So, and then you only have to get two OB throws before you're allowed to advance to the island drop zone. For the men, they have to go OB three times before they get to move down to the green. And they don't get an opportunity to go to a separate drop zone. They have to re-tee from the tee pad up to, you know, two additional times for three total OB strokes. And, you know, we've seen it blow people up. For the women, you can either re-tee or you can take it from the drop zone, which is, it's under the tree on the left-hand side, kind of near where the booth was for the broadcast in 2018. You know what I'm talking about, Jamie?
Absolutely.
So it'd be a fairly short shot from there. Throw in potential for sure. I don't know why any player would choose to re-tee rather than go to that drop zone after their first OB stroke, but they're basically making the OB rules less punishing. I'm not really sure why they're doing that, but that's the rules. So,
yeah, good call on that, because as I was reading through, I didn't quite notice it. It is interesting. The one thing I'll say about that drop spot for the Women's National Championship is that when the island hole 17 is in the A pin, and that's the further left pin if you're standing on the tee, the one that's really close to the water and to the hay bales, if you're not running the basket and trying to put in a long putt or a long throw in, you're going to have to throw to the wider side of the green and then putt back at the short side where the OB is just a few feet behind. So something to watch for. What side of the green can you play to once you go to that drop spot? But definitely interesting for 17 and 18. So it is going to be a little different, but I think the challenge is still going to be there at the end of the day, which is the cool part. They're going to get that same feeling. Yeah,
exactly. Same thing. I mean, maybe less of an opportunity for huge numbers because of the changing rules about the OB. You know, you're not just going to go OB three straight times like we see some players in USDGC do. But it's still going to be a pivotal hole. if it's close at all in the final round, there's going to be a ton of pressure on that shot, just as there is in USDGC.
No doubt. It should be fun, though. I think that I'm just trying to think of, like, who do you pick for the Women's National Championship? The more info that comes out about this tournament, the more you kind of throw it into your brain and say, oh, does this change who the favorites are? And I don't know that it does, but that's a good thing, because that means that they're, at least to this point, we'll see how it all plays. That's going to be the ultimate test, right? But to this point, it does seem like they're doing a good job of replicating the same type of challenge that has existed for the championship for the past 20 years to this WNC concept that's being run.
So we're going to head over to our subscriber bonus segment now, where we're going to talk about the dark horse candidates to win a USDGC or a Women's National Championship title. So we hope you'll join us for that. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll be back with you next week for our USDGC preview show. Really looking forward to it. For Jamie Thomas, I'm Charlie Eisenman saying so long, and we'll talk to you next week right here on The Upshot.
See ya.